Hello, everyone, and welcome to a new episode of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Spencer, and I'm joined by two of my best friends in the entire world. And they're not Casey, and they're not Michael. I'm joined by Matt Klang.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
And Quentin Pierce.
Hello, everyone.
So, hold on. This is the first time you two have been on the podcast together, right?
On this podcast, it may be.
I'm not sure. I think so. I might have filled in at some point. I guess a lot of times that I was filling in was for Quentin, though, so maybe not.
And a lot of times Quentin was filling in was for you.
Right.
Yeah, it's maybe the first time. Somebody check us on that.
I'm pretty sure it is. Are you guys okay with that?
I mean, I
know how much you hate Matt Kling, Quentin.
I've got butterflies in my tummy, and you know,
you're nervous.
All hot and nervous.
You think he's gonna shoot you or something?
I know he is.
No, I finally got my vengeance on you this weekend. It's fine. We're all good.
That's true.
Beating you twice in one tournament.
Well, he didn't beat me twice. We drew the first time.
Oh,
yeah. No, we played some games for fun though.
Oh, okay.
The second game definitely wasn't going as well.
You implied that you beat him twice.
Oh, yeah. Is that what he said?
That is what he said. He literally said that.
I did say that. I didn't imply it at all. But to be fair, I did crush you that first game, and the second game it was like pretty close, but we ended up stopping before because didn't have much time.
All right. So he lied to me. I get it. Well, you know who won't lie to you is Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgames.slc.com. You can get 15% off your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout. And you get 4% off every order by using the code Would That Be Good at checkout. They're literally the best place to buy Magic cards. Quentin buys all of his cards there. I buy all of my cards there. Matt doesn't own any Magic cards, but if he did, he'd buy them there.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, they're the best. Like, in every way, like, they're cheaper than, like, Fireball, SCG, typically, or right within somewhere there. I don't know. I'm always happy with them.
Yeah, their stock is always great. I'm always very happy to chat with the employees there. They're very polite, friendly. Give me your business. They deserve it.
Yeah, they're literally the best. So check out our sponsor at Oasis Games. They deserve it. Also, this podcast is also brought to you by the listeners. This week, we have a new patron of the show, Daniel Jennings. So shout out to Daniel. Really excited to have you aboard, Daniel. Daniel is going to be getting some playtesting with members of the show as one of his benefits of becoming a patron. Also, Daniel, I will be shipping you a wristband as well as some other stuff. So, you know, keep in touch and we'll get that for you as soon as possible. Let's move on to the first segment of the show. Every week we talk about something that we've been doing to improve our Magic. It's hashtag always improving. We believe on this podcast that if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And if you're getting worse, you're getting closer to Matt Kling. Not really. It's not a phrase that I've ever used before, but I really appreciate it.
Now it is.
Yeah. Matt, what did you do in the past week to help yourself improve at Magic?
I think that, honestly, the biggest thing that I've done this week is just realize that I'm not focused on winning Magic as much as I am just playing well. I've basically just trying to get over the, you know, considering variance at all. Just as if I play well in a match of Magic, that's all that I really care about.
Yeah, I think that's a huge part of, like, something that makes Magic more rewarding. If your self-worth is based upon your results, Magic is not very fun. Whereas if your self-worth is based upon, like, you playing well and, like, doing your best, Magic can be really fun, and also you can get better a lot quicker. So,
still easier said than done. I did get savaged by Austin Giltz in the finals of that PPTQ yesterday. But that being said, I was still happy with the way that I played. And
good. I think that's all you can ask for. So, Quentin, what did you do this week to improve at Magic?
Well, for people that don't know me, I've been a very one-dimensional player for most of my Magic career, playing basically nothing but control decks. So I've been trying to
play Jund and Volokut. Yeah. Wolf Run.
Those are basically
Wolf Run's a control deck. Jund's a control deck. Okay.
See?
Okay.
See, control decks. I knew what I was saying. But been trying to branch out, play a bunch of different decks, and I started playing T-Merge recently, and man, is that deck hard to play, and it is definitely outside of my comfort zone. But I've been having a lot of fun, enjoying myself, even though, you know, it's not the type of deck I usually prefer, and feel like I'm learning a lot.
Yeah, one of the things for me this week is in a similar vein, and that's we talk about it a lot on this podcast, but I really tried to keep an open mind this weekend going to the Pro Tour. You know, whether it's different things that people are playing, you know, outside of Skywalker Shot, I feel like my mind was very open to cards and the things that people could be doing. And it's sad that I was so open to things because the Pro Tour ended up very similar to our testing as far as like what the metagame breakdown was, you know, and yeah, so it, but with that being said, like, even today we were sitting downstairs and Matt Kling talked about contingency plan and how it was great in the Etherworks Marvel deck. And I was like, no, like index is bad. And he's like, well, that card's not index. And then he explained that you could put cards into your graveyard. I'm like, that's way better than index. So very interesting take on a card that, like, yeah, I think that is something that we could have missed. You know, playtesting will certainly come to fruition and tell us if that's true. But I am very open to the decks at this Pro Tour and learning and trying to further myself as a Magic player by just not shaking everything that you see off as bad. This format's a little easier to do it with because so many sweet things are happening. But yeah, I just tried to learn a lot this weekend. That's typically what I do Pro Tour weekends and it's something that I've adjusted over the past years is being willing to learn while watching coverage. Luckily, there was a lot of Shouta matches, so that's really easy to learn when that's happening. But
yeah. That is if you can slow down time.
Yeah, the man plays Magic at the speed of light, so...
He plays Magic at about my speed.
Sure.
So...
Fair enough. It's more to the point that he's considered all these different lines by the time that he finally makes a play.
That's true. I mean, he's a master. Like, he probably holds the record for the most Pro Tour top 16, so... The guy's definitely a master. That's probably not true, because John Finkel has 12 top 8s, so...
If we're counting top 8s as also top 16s?
Yeah.
I think if we're just counting 9 through 16, he probably does have the record. Yeah.
Yeah, so... Let's move on to Card of the Week. So this is brought to you by Patreon. Check us out at patreon.com/DCMTG. You can be eligible to win the Card of the Week just by becoming a patron of $3 or more per month. You know, it's a great way to support the podcast. Starting at $1, you know, anything that you see fit that you can afford, we really appreciate. You know, this podcast is always going to be free, but we really appreciate everything we can get. And even if you are a patron, you got some sweet benefits this month. You got some of the deck lists that we played at the Pro Tour early. You got, you know, some insight into the testing. And then you'll even get a hangout with us where we'll actually go in-depth with you on the Pro Tour testing, letting you ask questions about things like that. So that you can check that out at patreon.com/CCMTG. This week, James Nash is going to win a Torrential Gearhulk because this card is mono finals right now as we're recording the podcast. What the heck?
Yeah, I mean, I knew the card was powerful. Like, I don't think anybody had a question of whether Torrential Gearhulk itself was powerful, right? It was more of, are the spells in the format going to be powerful enough to support it?
It's actually funny. We'll get into this next week when Casey and Michael are here, but Torrential Gearhulk was a pivotal part of mine and Casey's testing, as we very much were high on Grixis control in this format, and Torrential Gearhulk was a huge part of that. You know, we really loved the card. You know, we did have a some number split between those and Noxious Gearhulk in those decks, but Torrential Gearhulk was certainly powerful for us. And it actually looks better on coverage than it played for us, to be honest.
Yeah, I think a big one that we were missing in a lot of our decks was the sheer amount of Glimmer of Genius that people are willing to play alongside of Torrential Gearhulk.
My Grixis deck had 4.
Okay, sure. So I didn't get to play against your list a lot. I got to play against Casey's list a lot. Sure. And Casey's list was much more of a tap-out Grixis mid-range deck.
Yeah, that's fair. And I think that when you're playing Torrential Gearhulk, and I think that's the other thing that didn't happen in our testing, is Casey and I diverged on Grixis control a little bit. And also, we both were really high on it, and we talked about the deck a lot. But something that was happening is, because of the way that our decks were constructed, similar, because they got closer and closer to like being in between tap-out and not tap-out, and because of that, we were losing to Team Etherworks. Like, some percentage of, like, a lot higher percentage than was happening on camera. And that's a huge part of it. Like, you know, for me, Casey was, like, playing Void Shatters, and I was playing Spell Shrivels. And, like, the decks were just very different. And we never really got together on that. And because of that, I don't think that either of us saw the power of the my win condition is Torrential Gear Hulk plan.
Yeah, absolutely. And like we've seen Shota do this all weekend. Like in combination with Unlicensed Disintegration, you can turn the corner very quickly with these decks too. And Wandering Fumeral just having so much power for a man land.
Yeah. And one of the things that that you know Casey did is he had like lots of things like Prophetic Prism to fix his mana in his decks, which also, you know, made Unlicensed Disintegration better. So there's a lot of different things happening, but when we watched Shota, like Matt said, his only artifact was Torrential Gearhulk, and that was enough.
Right, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, the card was insane. It's a win condition that is an interactive spell, and what more could you ask for, Quentin?
Nothing, that's all I need.
So, you know, hit us up, James. We'll ship you a Torrential Gearhulk and get you started on your next Jeskai or Grixis deck. So there are no power rankings this week. We don't do power rankings the week of the Pro Tour. It's not helpful because there's not the way that the power rankings are set up. We give 6 points to first, 5 points to second, 4 points to top four, 3 to top 8, 2 to top 16, 1 to top 32. But there's too many variables because it's a two format, you know, tournament that we don't do power rankings during the Pro Tour. But we are going to talk about a lot of the decks. So let's go on to this week, the Pro Tour reactions episode. That's why I have these guys here. You know, we're going to react to what happened to the Pro Tour and kind of talk about our thoughts on it. We're not going to get too involved in like the testing of the Pro Tour that any of us helped with or did. That will be safe for next week. Instead, we're just going to kind of react to what we saw, as well as our thoughts from testing, but we're not going to go in depth on the testing itself. So, top eight decks this time around. I'm just going to read this. We never do this on this podcast. This is might be the first time we've ever talked about like an actual list of top eight decks. So, we have white red tokens, Mardu aggro, which is really four color aggro by the way. White red vehicles, Grixis control, Jeskai control, Khemur Aetherworks, blue red spells, and blue white flash. Okay, so are these? This is literally eight different decks. Is this strange to you?
It's kind of not what I was expecting. I was expecting Copter to be a lot more dominant, but this is a very pleasant surprise for me.
Sure. Well, so Copter was still what four decks of the top eight.
That's a lot better than eight, right?
Yeah, I mean,
was it in the blue white flash deck also?
You were the one saying there were 16 of them. Yeah, it was in the blue white flash deck.
Okay, yes. Yeah, then there's 16 of them.
Yeah,
that's what I thought. Yeah, I mean, it's in half the top eight. I actually was expecting less Copters because how could we possibly have as many as we had at the SCG?
Yeah, I actually didn't expect it to perform as well as it did, considering like I just assumed that most people's testing would be like, all right, how are we going to beat Smuggler's Copter?
Right.
Let's do that.
Right. So that didn't surprise me. I am surprised at the variance of the styles of decks. You know, we have hyper aggressive decks in red white. We have mid range aggro decks in white red vehicles. We have right in between those with Mardu aggro. We have slightly bigger than that with white blue white flash, like, and then we have a combo deck in Aetherworks. We have this strange deck with blue red spells, right? Where it's like this thing that's kind of hard to define, and then we have just actual control decks. The entire spectrum is in this top eight.
Yeah, this seems like a very healthy format, and I really hope it continues. I was pleasantly surprised to see this top eight.
So, let's look at the numbers for day two. So, the numbers for day two are pretty interesting, actually. So, this is pretty rare for a Pro Tour where all of the decks did well. Every deck that people played, for the most part, did pretty well.
Yeah, almost no deck over or underperformed. Everything was within
within 1.17%.
Yeah, exactly.
The biggest change of the entire format is Aetherworks, Khemur Aetherworks gained 1.17%.
Well, it looks like actually the slightly bigger change was Black Green Delirium underperformed by 1.56.
Sure, that's true. So the best performing deck, quote unquote, Khemur Aetherworks, as far as like day two conversion, the worst being Black Green Delirium. It's I don't think it's that big of a deal because every deck was the same, right? And it's not that big of a percentage. Whereas in some Pro Tours, you'd see like every person that played this deck day two'd.
Right.
Like off of entirely their constructed rating or their constructed matches. So that wasn't a thing at this one. What does that mean, Matt?
It's hard to say exactly what that means. I think it means that this format is going to be a lot more, you know, kind of a play what you're comfortable with format, and just try to play the best you can with it. And you're probably going to do well if you are comfortable with the deck you're playing and playing it well.
Quentin?
Yeah, I would agree. I hope it continues to be that way. We'll see. I mean,
even from our PPTQ yesterday, I think that was our experience, right? I think there were close to 8 different decks in the top 8.
Yeah, I mean, that's true.
You know, kind of looking at when they lump decks together as like Aetherworks, Delirium, Midrange, Vehicles, Aggro, Control, Energy, Emerge, I'm not sure how they're splitting up certain types of decks, but Control, which is, this is something I didn't notice until just this very second, had 24 types of Control decks into day 2. And they had a loss of -1.25, which is not a huge amount, but it's the biggest amount of a loss out of all of these, where the biggest gain was Colossus decks. Here's the thing. The biggest deck at the Pro Tour was Aetherworks. So why would Control have the biggest decrease? I think the reason is actually because of things like, I mean, we'll look at it right now, but I would assume that there was some amount of, like, maybe red-black control or just plain blue-white? Is that possible?
Well, there also might be a lot of crossfire going on, too. Cards that are good against Aetherworks Marvel are also going to be pretty potent against control strategies.
Yeah, there are actually some number of blue-white control decks just straight, which we did test very briefly initially, and it was probably the worst-performing deck in our entire testing.
Well, I think even beyond that, I think that if you're going to play Control at a Pro Tour, you really have to get the metagame right.
You have
right?
to get it. That's true.
So there are going to be a percentage of the people that got it perfect, right? Like Shota and Carlos.
Yeah,
and
Shota, who picked his deck on a Thursday.
Yeah, well, that might be exaggerated. I mean, it's hard to say how much of that deck he actually had, you know, constructed and just, like, finalized the numbers on Thursday or whatever.
Sure.
But I think that yeah, those people are going to do very well, but anybody that missed the metagame, and I mean, Shota could very well miss a metagame at some point too, right? They're just not going to do as well. So I think Control is generally going to have a lower conversion rate than most other archetypes, but the ones that are picking the metagame right are going to do very well.
That's a good point.
Any other thoughts from just looking at like the numbers from day one to day two? Anything that stuck out to either of you?
I am surprised that the Metalwork Colossus deck was as real of a deck as it was. I know it's been doing fairly well online recently, but it seemed kind of like a more just like a Timmy deck than anything else, I guess.
Yeah, I was very interested by specifically the deck tech on the Teemer Aetherworks deck, which, or not Aetherworks, the Teemer deck, which really was just red to activate the Hanawar Garrisons so that he could
haste them out.
The battlements,
right? Yeah, so the Tuesday or Wednesday before the Pro Tour, we had a team meeting, and during the team meeting, I said, hey, before this Pro Tour, I just want to say that I think that we might be missing on Glintness Crane and Deadlock Trap inside the Aetherworks Marvel deck. I think those might be real cards. And Michael Hinderocker quickly brewed up a deck with those cards that included
Metalwork Colossus.
And that deck seemed very good. And apparently, the guy that almost top-aided with the deck said that at one point he had Aetherworks Marvel Ulamog in that deck, and like he decided that the Colossus side was more consistent than the Aetherworks side, so he just played one side of the deck. So, very interesting.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense to me. I really do like the synergy there with Sanctum of Ugin and Metalwork Colossus. Like, it can add just an insurmountable board very quickly, right?
Yeah. All right, so let's kind of just move into our thoughts. And Quentin, what card most impressed you?
Well, I'm going to give the nod to Smuggler's Copter here. I think that card is just insane. And it belongs in any deck that's going to be attacking you. We saw it in white-red vehicles, blue-white flash, even Ifro's black-green deck, and it did lots of work. So, yeah, I think this is card is just as good as everybody said it was.
What do you guys think makes Smuggler's Copter so good?
Well, I mean, where do you start, right? Like,
no, I mean,
it excels.
Start wherever you want. I want to know all of the reasons.
So it excels by a lot on the vanilla test, right? Like, it's a 3-3 for 2 mana, which is already great
flying, in
theory. Yeah, and then also has flying. That's not part of the vanilla test, though, right? It's not quite that, right, because you do have to actually have a crew cost. But the crew cost is so low that it actually works more to give all your creatures pseudo-haste. And the fact that it's genuine, like, card advantage some amount of the time when you're playing Madness spells, and at the very worst, card selection when you're not, is just staggering. And the fact that it does that when you block, too, is unreal.
And then also it makes things like Chandra unplayable.
Right, yeah. It pushes certain cards out of the metagame because they just don't interact with the card at all, right? It's only a creature on your turn when you're attacking with it, or their turn when you're blocking with it.
Yeah, one of the things that you need to think about is, like, we haven't even mentioned a Liliana deck on this podcast once yet, other than the brief mention by Quentin of Ifro's Black Green Delirium deck.
Which had, like, one copy of Liliana in the main, right?
So, how does a card like Liliana, which was arguably one of the top 5 cards in the last set, just disappear?
Copter's probably largely responsible.
Yeah, I agree with that. I absolutely think that the Copter is responsible for a fair amount of that. That being said, I do think that Liliana is great against the decks that are playing Smuggler's Copters for the most part.
Yeah, there's a balance, and that's, I think it's beautiful. What Wizards has been doing with the sets, where every set drastically changes the format, is actually a thing of beauty.
Yep.
So
I agree with that.
For me, the card that most impressed me, we already talked about it a little bit, but Torrential Gearhulk. The fact that, like, so when you think about it, you're like, oh, like, you need to cast a spell that costs 4 but to get a Snapcaster Mage, but it's like, do you? It's a 5-6. It's not, like, if Snapcaster was a 5-6, like, that'd be a whole different story.
Yeah, it would be a very different card.
Like, maybe, like, Flash Tarmogoyf Plus. He's so good. And that's kind of what this card is sometimes.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely are paying the cost up front, but the fact that it is a 5-6 means you're usually gaining a lot more than 2 mana out of it, right?
Like, yeah.
Even if your spell costs less than...
Yeah, can you imagine if, like at what point in the mana curve does a 5-6 need to just be... A 5-6 Flash just need to be a card you'd play? Three or four? Somewhere in there.
I think
3.5 mana.
Yeah, at 4 mana, like, a 5-6 Flash is pretty powerful, right?
Sure. In the right decks, yeah, that might just be a card you would play. You know. I mean, sometimes we don't play 4 mana 5-5s.
That's true, but when they have Flash, it really does add another dynamic to it, right? Like, Avacyn being a 4-4 Flash flying was almost enough for her to see play without any other text on that card.
Yeah. So, the card certainly just has enough of it. And then the fact that, like, Quentin gets to counter spells with Torrential Gearhulk just makes it all the better. And even then, like, I've seen so much of it this weekend, and I have been more and more impressed, and I'm very excited for Blue to be back. Like, it really was missing the last format. I don't care what anyone says about the last... Not even just the last format. The last... Since Khans of Tarkir, almost. Like, it's just...
Blue and red.
Yeah. Just blue and red have been gone, and blue-red was, you know, did very well. And red, obviously, did very well. But very happy to see the number of blue and red decks. I believe... 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 blue decks. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 red decks. So, you know, nice change. And even then, like, I would expect that... I know that in our testing, something like Virus Gearhulk was very good. Or Verdurous, however you want to say it. Whatever it's actually called. So, very good. So, I would expect green cards to see play, but I was most impressed with Torrential Gearhulk. Matt, yours was a sideboard card that saw a lot of camera action.
Yeah.
What card most impressed you?
Niblets of Frost was actually the most impressive card for me this weekend, just because, for a couple reasons, really. For one, Pierre did not actually win a game. I don't know if he did after the top eight started, but like on camera, I think he only won one pre-board game, and that was
2-0 Matt Nass.
Yes, that was the only pre-board game that he won was against Matt Nass. So all of his other camera matches, he didn't win a pre-board game.
By the way, he said is his worst matchup.
Yeah, he got very lucky.
He said, quote, "This is my worst matchup. I'm so unlucky." And then Matt Mulligan to 5 or something.
Yeah.
Game one. And yeah.
So why the reason I was so impressed by this card was because it basically carried him into the top eight, it seemed. Like, his game one plan was just not working the way that I think that he had planned, and Nibbles of Frost was really pulling a lot of work in the post-board games.
Yeah, I think LSV interviewed him and said, so what is this deck's good matchups? And he's like, so pre-board, I'm not favored against Teemer Aetherworks, Green-Black Delirium, Teemer Emerge, the control decks. Actually, maybe my main deck is just bad. But my sideboard is great.
Yeah, and I wonder, like, because Nibbles of Frost isn't a card we've seen any play, really, right? It seemed powerful when it was spoiled, sure. But it hasn't really gotten there. So I wonder if that card is actually just poised to do well right now, or if sure. It was just a great sideboard strategy because people were bringing out the removal.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to get into this in a few, you know, in a little bit, but I would expect different creatures to do better. I know that when we're going to talk about it, like, I think blue-white creatures at large are still good, but they're not nearly as good.
Even if they're as good still, I mean, obviously they're not, right? Because Collect Company was, like, a huge thing for at least Reflector Mage specifically.
Yeah. And Spellqueller.
Yeah,
and Spellqueller's still good.
Yeah,
they're both still good,
right.
But...
Right. But even if they're close to as good, they're not going to be as popular, certainly.
Yeah. Let's move on to the next thing. So what deck was the biggest surprise to you? We'll start with you, Quentin.
Control decks. I have not been expecting a control deck to do well for quite some time, just because that's been what Wizards has been pushing for. So it was really cool to see them come out, do well. One of them is going to win the Pro Tour, as the finals is going on right now between Jeskai Control and Grixis Control.
Yeah, I definitely didn't think that Control was going to be, you know, a force like it was. Control generally does, you know, usually puts up a top eight or two, right? Like
at the Pro Tour, for sure.
It's not untypical for a Pro Tour. But yeah, definitely. I think that Control really surprised a lot of people this weekend. And honestly, that ties into my next point, which is that my surprise was the Aetherworks Marvel deck being so popular at the Pro Tour.
Yeah, during our testing, we saw that Aetherworks Marvel was powerful. I did not think it was that powerful, though.
Yeah, I mean, we tested it maybe, like, I don't even think the full set was spoiled when we started trying to turn four Ulamogs, right? Like,
it just seemed too good to be true.
Yeah, I mean, and I do think that it's still... So somebody on coverage, I don't remember who it was exactly, brought up the point that this Pro Tour was the biggest Pro Tour possibly in history.
It was like near 500.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so a lot of people thought that they needed to kind of throw up the Hail Mary, if you know, as it were.
Sure.
And play a little bit more of a, you know, just an incredibly powerful deck rather than trying to get there on their rock decks or whatever. I'm not sure how good that logic or strategy is, but I know that I think it was LSV that was talking about it, and he said that it wasn't actually even like necessarily the best deck in their testing, but it was the deck that they decided to play because the Pro Tour was so large.
Sure.
But I was very surprised to see the percentages of Aetherworks Marvel decks. I did not think that it would be the most popular deck at the Pro Tour, certainly, even though most of the people that I knew that were going to the Pro Tour were playing Aetherworks Marvel.
Yeah, I guess maybe that should have been a little tip for us there, huh?
Yeah.
Well, kind of. So... This is, I have an interesting opinion on this. So when we were testing Aetherworks Marvel, we were, between 5 and 7 cards off from our very first list is exactly what Child and Fireball's main deck looked like.
Yeah, I mean, even the Cathartic, well, so actually, they didn't have the Cathartic Reunions in the first list. I actually mentioned that afterwards. I'm like, you know, we should try Cathartic Reunion in this deck. Then we did go to that afterwards.
So the first list they played, I'm saying, was within 7 cards of their list.
Okay. So basically just minus the contingency plans.
Yeah, we were just like all energy cards, Teemer Aetherworks, 4 Merkul, 4 Ulamog, right? Which is pretty close to what they did. And then we also had Kozilek's Return in that deck.
Right.
And here's the thing, is like, many of us, if not almost all of us, were like, ah, this deck's cute, but it's bad. Like, it's way too inconsistent to play. And if it weren't for Danny, we would have probably never played the deck again.
Yeah, almost definitely, actually.
Yeah. And here's the thing. Even seven renditions later, but we still had doubts about the deck. So for me, I actually didn't think. Like, my exact words before, in our last team meeting before the Pro Tour were, I expect that this deck is very level one, that almost everyone will figure it out, but they will put it aside because of the problems that we had with it before we got to our last version. And it's funny, because, like, everyone played basically the version we had at the very beginning. And I do believe our version was better. Like, just from our testing, our version was better, right?
Yeah, I mean, in our testing, the new version that we had performed much better than the current version that they're playing, so...
Yeah, and, I mean, Michael's constructed record was pretty good. If he had just finished out, he would have been in the top-performing decks.
What was his overall constructed record at that
point? He was 5-3 when he dropped from constructed.
Okay.
So, I mean, he just needed one more constructed win, which he could have easily gotten.
Right.
I mean, he just quit. I think that our constructed deck was actually, like, better. And specifically in the mirror, according to Danny, it was very good.
Yeah, I mean, that makes a lot of sense. Drowner of Hope is quite strong against Ulamogs and Emrakuls.
But I'm with you. I didn't expect people to be playing Team Earthworks. I thought that they would have given up on it like we mostly did at the beginning. So, the other thing that surprised me is the blue-white decks. It's funny. I was going to text Casey today, or last night. I was going to say, you know, I think one of our biggest mistakes was thinking that people would play blue-white flash at this Pro Tour. I think that too much of our conversation resolved around people playing Spellqueller, Reflector Mage, Avacyn decks. Like, and then the numbers came out today, and there was a total of one deck that finished 9-1 at the Pro Tour in Constructed, and there were four people playing it, and it was blue-white.
Yeah, so to be a little more clear, there were four total copies of that one deck that all finished a 9-1.
And it's the only deck that finished 9-1.
Right.
So that's, by the way, that's insane. Spellqueller was a huge part of that because of the amount of Aetherworks Marvel, and that won't be true outside of this Pro Tour. Like, you're not going to see 18% of the field next week be Aetherworks Marvel, I don't think. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's going to be 25%. And then Blue White's insane. But either way, the things that we noticed in testing is the decrease in the value of Reflector Mage and kind of how, like, our best Avacyn decks were green decks. So when we tested some number of these decks and they were fine, but it just seemed worse than green-white, and then green-white seemed worse than black-blue, than black-green. Because, like, the real best card in that deck was Verdurous Gearhulk. And I'm legitimately surprised. Like, if you had asked me, Spencer, between blue white flash and red white vehicles, how many of those decks will be in the top eight? I would have said zero. I mean, I might have given you one white red vehicles deck just because, like, it won the SCG, so people will play it. But I'm legitimately surprised, and I'm legitimately impressed that blue white did that well at this Pro Tour. Because nobody's going to talk about it because there was only one in the top eight, but it destroyed it.
I mean, I think we're not giving people enough credit. We always think that, and I actually do think people are getting more on board on the looking at the 27 points and the 23 points or better lists.
Sure.
Because you do see people playing these decks. Like, for instance, the Thermo Alchemist deck was actually not featured in the top eight at all, right?
Last sure. season,
and it was only in the 9-1 or better decks, and it was very popular the next week.
That's true. That's very true. By the way, there was a total of four blue-white flash decks in day two. That means every person in day two with the deck finished 9-1 with the deck.
That's impressive.
Yeah, that's a good record.
Man, I'm surprised. Like, I could probably talk about this for like 20 minutes. Quentin, do you think this deck is good?
I think it was very good in this metagame. I think it crushes Aetherworks Marvel. So if they were playing it because they're expecting to play a lot of those matchups, then good on them.
Well, no, because, like, some of the people said that, like, because they interviewed somebody else, and they're like, yeah, I actually had no time to prepare for this, so I just decided what cards I wanted to play, and I showed up.
Well, that's one way to do it.
I mean, you can't actually believe that a deck's bad when it performed that well, right? Over the four different people.
That's the thing, is, like, I always thought this deck was, like, a tier two deck that, like, people would have fun playing.
Right.
And it's... that could still be true. It could still be a tier 1.5 deck that was very good in this metagame, but it seems unlikely at this point.
It does. It certainly does. I mean, no matter how good your deck is in a metagame, it has to be an objectively good deck to finish with, what is that, like 36-4?
Yeah. So it's an impressive feat, to say the very least. So what card did you feel like came out and really put in work? So, like, not the card that impressed you the most, but, like, what card put in work for you, Quentin?
Gonna go with Thing in the Ice.
Which I believe is about to win this Pro Tour.
Okay, so is Shota looking pretty good here?
Yeah, when I went downstairs for a second, he had a Torrential Gearhulk, a Thing in the Ice in play, attacking, and it looked like he had some counter spells or something to back it up.
And so. This was game 3, I assume?
This is game 4. He's up 2-1.
Okay. Okay.
So.
Yeah. Was he playing them main board?
Were
they
was,
in the,
yeah.
Okay. This was a card that was extremely hyped. Didn't really have its time in the sun.
Specifically by me.
I loved it too, man. I was really excited about this card.
I wouldn't say that Spencer necessarily loved the card, but he certainly thought it was going to be powerful when that was first spoiled.
Oh, did you not like it, Spencer?
I think it was probably...
No, I think
it was going to ruin Magic.
I think... Is that what I said? Yeah. I think the card is actually busted.
I mean, it very well could be. In Standard, if you've got the right amount of spells
I think that in the right modern format, it's busted.
Sure, sure. That's definitely a possibility. But yeah, seeing it do well and, you know, hopefully win this Pro Tour, because I'm certainly rooting for Shota.
Also, I did push, like, mono Thing in the Ice decks at the beginning of the last format, which is what Matt is remembering.
It's quite the card.
No, I think that first, I mean... And in this format, it's especially good, right? Where it's like it makes you crew your copters against the control deck, which is important because you can play removal spells that kill copter as long as you have it in play, right? Where you're like, all right, crew your copter. Can't kill your copter. Like, nice, no attack.
Right.
So I think that's a huge part of what made the card good. And then even being able to flip it after they've crewed their copter, which he did multiple times on coverage.
Well, and no doubt... a big part of this is red actually being good. It's obviously the best color pair with blue if you're going to play Thing in the Ice, right? If backing it up with some good cheap red removal spells is the best way to flip it.
Yeah, I think Harness Lightning might have actually been pretty underrated going into this Pro Tour, honestly.
I literally called it the Red Doomblade map.
not by you specifically. I just mean by the community as a whole, right? Like, I think that Harness Lightning is really what's making these decks
work. So I think that was true last weekend, but I think going into the Pro Tour, I saw a lot of people talking about Harness Lightning, specifically, like, this is the answer to Smuggler's Copter. Like, everybody calm down. Like, there were people asking for the banning of Smuggler's Copter, but they're unreasonable people.
Yeah.
And then there were people that were like, no, just play Harness Lightning, you're fine.
Yeah, everybody's going to have overreactions, especially when there's something like as staggering as 32 copies of Smuggler's Copter in the top 8 or whatever.
Yeah, it's messaging. Overreaction weekend. Week 1 is overreaction weekend for everybody. I literally did a video about it. But I think that what Quentin is focusing on specifically is, like, red is back and red is good with Thing in the Ice, which we saw last year. And Smuggler's Copter is a card which makes red better, which makes Thing in the Ice better. So it kind of, like, culminated into this thing that we're watching just actually, I believe, winning the Pro Tour from what I'm seeing right now.
Ah, just finished, huh?
Congrats, Shota.
So I can't confirm that yet, but I think we'll be able to in just a second. So for me, the card that stood out that really put in work, I know it's a constructed podcast, but I think this was... it was almost card of the week just because of how good it was in both limited and constructed, and that was Attune with Aether. What the heck?
Yeah, I mean, every time that we were playing the Aetherworks Marvel decks, your hand with the Attune with Aether was so much better than your hands without them, right?
Like, yeah.
Almost as much as, like, your hands with Aether Marvel versus the hands without them, right?
Yeah. The card is absolutely insane in the deck, and it's even insane in limited. And it put in so much work for such a, like, mediocre effect. It's a lay of the land.
Yeah.
It's a card that shouldn't even see constructed play.
they're very tricky down there at Wizards of the Coast with those kind of things, right? Like, you look at Sphinx's Revelation, like, it's like, okay, it's Blue Sun Zenith, gains you some amount of life, it'll be fine, or whatever. Well, and then all of a sudden it's format warping, right? You just tack on just some small little thing to a card that already exists, and then suddenly it gets a lot better.
It's funny, because, like, what's the Delirium one?
Traverse the Elven Wall?
Yeah, Traverse the Elven Wall is the same way. It's like, that card's bad. It's like a lay of the land. But it's like, oh, also it's Worldly Tutor sometimes.
It finds you your Emrakuls.
I mean, it's more closely related to Green Sun Zenith, right? Because, like, Worldly Tutor only puts it on top of your deck.
Shut up, Matt.
I'm just saying. Like, I second that. That is actually a more accurate description of what Traverse the Elven Wall does when you have Delirium.
Okay. So can we come to the conclusion that it's like Uldamari's Call instead, since Green Sun Zenith cost 1,000 mana?
Well, no, but it does cost the same as Green Sun Zenith, right? Because it's one green plus the creature's casting cost.
I wish you were on fire. I'm just teasing you. No, that's a good point. That's a good point. I think that, like, when I'm looking back on this, I'm going to look at Attune with Ether and be like, man, I missed on that card. I missed on that one. So that card really put in work this weekend from what I saw. What saw play that you don't expect to keep seeing play, Matt?
I would say that I don't expect the Dynavolt Tower decks to continue to see play.
Well, the decks could, but they might have Nibbles and Frost.
Yeah, I guess I don't specifically expect Dynavolt Tower to continue to see play.
Okay. Why is that? What didn't impress you about it?
I just think that it's pretty much what it looks like, right? It's just it's too much of a cost for an effect that's just not powerful enough. You have to activate this card 8 times to kill your opponent with nothing else, right? So theoretically, if you were playing some amount of Burn to the Face, it could get there a little bit faster than usual, but it's just not worth the 3-mana commitment and taking a turn off of trying to do that, right? Like, if you're trying to burn your opponent out, you already have the resources to do that with Collective Defiance and Incendiary Flow and Fiery Temper and the like.
Matt, we skipped you on the last question, by the way. So what card put in the most work for you?
I would say Immolating Glare. I was really impressed by how good that card was at taking out different things. And
they kept it in the control mirror.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it was killing Wandering Fumaroles and Thing in the Ices, and it was...
When that card came out, I tweeted at Quentin, "You're welcome." Do you remember that?
I do remember that.
No, I think that the card is literally White Doomblade in this format. And also, the amount that it's better than Skywheeler Shot is impressive.
It's certainly... I mean, well, yes and no, right? Against specifically Smuggler's Copter, it's a little bit worse because... They actually do get the attack trigger, yeah.
Sure.
But yeah, that being said, I've noticed that. And even, like, I know this is, we're talking specifically about the Pro Tour, but I did manage to play a league online today. And I was playing Nissa Vital Force, and I was playing against the Jeskai control deck, and he was able to Immolating Glare my lands. And I was like, oh man, I thought this card was, for whatever reason in my mind, it was Gideon's Reproach, right? Where it was only 4 damage to an attacking creature, not just, like, straight up destroy an attacking creature.
No, the card's just great.
Yeah, it's just very good. It's just a strict upgrade to that. I'm surprised that they would print something like that. And it performed very well this weekend. And in combination with Torrential Gearhulk specifically.
It makes you wonder, like, how close is it to Condemn? And is the fact that they don't gain life make it better than Condemn? Like, what is the... Because if you would have asked me or Matt, we would have told you that, like, we'd give anything for Condemn. And it's almost Condemn.
Yeah, certainly it's not better than Condemn. 1 versus 2 mana is a big difference, and the fact that Condemn gains them life usually didn't matter in the decks that you were playing it in, right?
Sure.
You're never going to play Immolating Glare in a deck that wants to be it's not trying to interact with you on the board.
It's also destroying an attacking creature, which also makes it worse than Condemn, where Condemn could do a lot of things, like stop indestructible creatures or stop,
right?
You know, things like that, so...
But yeah, that being said, I do think that card is great, and it was performing very well this weekend. Like, you don't want to play it in a deck that isn't planning on being attacked a lot, because it's not going to do anything if you're on the offense. But if you're playing a pure control deck, this card is very good.
Yeah, the other thing that I saw happen is they could kill an attacking creature with it flashing it back with Torrential Gearhulk and still block.
Right, and that, more importantly, yeah, I guess this doesn't actually matter as much, but with Blessed Alliance, it's also important to keep in mind that you can actually, like, block with the Torrential Gearhulk, let combat damage resolve, and then Blessed Alliance the other attacking creature while still in combat.
Yep. All right, let's finish what the next thing we were talking about. What's a play that you don't expect to keep seeing, to keep going? And Quentin, you put Marvel, but with a caveat that you still expect Marvel to see play, just not that much play.
Yeah, I certainly think that it being, what was it, 18%? Is that what we said of the metagame?
Yeah, I think day one it was, I can get you the exact number. It was 18.77 day one, so it would have been 17%, 17.6% of day one.
Okay. I think it's a deck, but I don't think it's going to show up in sheer numbers like that. I think you should have a plan to beat it when choosing your deck, but don't expect it to have these numbers again.
Yeah, the other thing to know, and we're going to talk about this a little bit next week from our testing and kind of talking about this, but don't have your plan be something like Appetite for the Unnatural or what's the one mana white one?
Fragmentize.
Yeah, don't have it be that. Have it be counter spells or reactive spells or proactive spells rather than... That's not even right either.
Well, just don't let
something,
it resolve.
Something that interacts with Aetherworks Marvel before they get an activation.
Yeah, so yeah. Even Life's Legacy, which is a terrible magic card, is better against the deck than something like Appetite or that's
not to say that these cards don't add up. I do definitely think that you should bring these cards in against Aetherworks Marvel.
Yes, if you have them, you should bring them in. But that they're certainly not as good as reacting to it. And it's actually something that LSV talked about on coverage. Was like, here's the thing. In our testing, we're like, oh, we're just going to beat it by playing these cards. And that didn't work. And in our testing, we actually thought we're going to beat it by like playing counter spells. And like that didn't work because post-board. And it's something that you heard Pierre Dijon and I think even Shouta said is like, this deck is resistant to control decks more so than we thought in our testing. Which is what we thought in our testing. And what Quentin is saying here is, I think, accurate. I think that for multiple reasons. I think, first of all, I don't think that this is the style of deck that a lot of people like. I don't like it. Matt doesn't like it. You don't like it. This is not a deck we would play.
Certainly not.
Like, if we were going to pick a deck to play at the Pro Tour, I don't think any of us would play this.
I think you're right.
But you still have to respect it. And there will be some, but I think Quinn's right. I think it will go down. So, and then for me, I think that the Pummeler decks were the most overrated thing in the history going into the Pro Tour.
I mean, I think that might be true. That being said, I would actually be interested in exploring some of these Pummeler decks just to keep an open mind and see what they can do.
I am keeping an open mind because like there was something that I certainly talked about going into the Pro Tour where so Green Red Energy is a deck that people on our team kept talking about. Kept like through the entire testing process. I don't think it ever had a winning percentage in any matchup, and people still talked about it. So why is that? What in the world is with this deck that people are like, no, it's still good?
I don't know that people necessarily think that it's good still after that much testing, but I think that the reason people keep harping on it is because it was the deck that was kind of fed to us, right? Like, the first few cards that were spoiled were definitely meant to imply that the red-green energy deck was expected to be a thing, at least by R&D.
Sure.
And it has powerful cards in Voltaic Brawler.
It does, but it doesn't have any good matchups from our testing. I'm not saying that that's, like, definitively true. I'm not saying that, like, that red-green energy is bad and you shouldn't play it. I could be wrong, but in our testing, it had actually no good matchups.
Yeah, that's true.
So where does this... And the thing is like, there are games, and this is certainly true, where, like, you're like, all right, here's the thing that I'm doing. Am I dead now? And that's a question that you can ask your opponent, right? Where it's like, am I dead? Yes or no. But that doesn't make the deck good. It makes you have to, like, maybe you have to think about Blessed Alliance in your white decks. Maybe you have to think about things like that. But that doesn't make a deck good, and I would expect this deck to go the way of Green Red Landfall, where it saw tons of play at the Pro Tour, right before the Pro Tour, and then we'll never see it again. But I could be wrong. But that's my thoughts on that. Any final thoughts from either of you guys about this Pro Tour? I mean, obviously, you know, Shoto won.
Yeah, it looks like Shoto won. That's awesome. I couldn't think of a better guy to win the Pro Tour. He's just great.
I would like to have one final thought on, you know, just going back to what I said before, that Torrential Gearhulk thing doesn't actually work. because I forgot that it's not actually Snapcaster Mage. It actually just casts the spell right away. So don't try to do the Blessed Alliance Torrential Gearhulk thing that I just described before.
Good talk.
Unless it's against
you know
Matt.
What's funny is somebody's going to tweet at you while listening to the podcast.
Yeah, they're
going
to get to that part. Yeah,
this.
Yeah.
This happens literally all the time where we'll correct ourselves at the end. We had a segment for like 2 weeks where it's like, what did we get wrong?
Right.
And we got rid of it, but but people would just tweet at us before they got to that part. And it's like, all right, well, this is a wasted segment. I want to actually touch really quick on Thing in the Ice. I did actually use the words when the card was spoiled, this is going to ruin Magic. That's overreaction, Spencer. But I do actually think that the card is quite insane. And it has now seen play in multiple formats, or multiple standard formats. And I know people have even tried it in different modern decks. I would not be surprised if... I don't think that you print a card as sweet as Thing in the Ice without wanting it to see play from Wizards. And I think that's important. And I'm really excited to play blue. During the time of Sphinx's Revelation, even though I won states with... Or I top-aided states with a Wolf Run deck and then one stage with a Jund deck. The deck I actually played the most were always Sphinx's Revelation decks during Sphinx's Revelation's time. You know, whether it was Esper, you know, whether it was Blue, White, Red. I loved those decks and I'm very excited because I love Glimmer of Genius.
Or whether it was the five color control deck.
Oh man, that I also played that deck.
That Jordan deck Nothingness? Yes.
Yeah, so I played mostly Sphinx's Revelation decks when Sphinx's Rev was out. The listeners of the podcast don't know that because, like, outside of the times that I played Quentin's control decks at different PPTQs, I haven't played a lot of control decks because control just actually hasn't been good. But I'm very excited. I, at heart, am a blue player, and specifically a blue-red player, so I like Jeskai and Grixis more than thing like straight blue white control, but I played it. But I am so excited. I'm so excited for Thing in the Ice. I'm so excited for Glimmer of Genius. I'm so excited for all of it. I could not be happier with this. And it's also nice and refreshing not to have like any amount of like decks that I think are terrible that people are playing other than Pummeler, which we figured out. But in short, I would say that like this format isn't close to being figured out. And if it is, it might be with a blue-white flash deck, and we're all going to be really sad really quick.
More Reflector Mage.
I would not be sad.
You would be sad if it was a mono-Reflector Mage format. Those are the worst.
Yeah, it's still blue-white.
What?
It's not anything like the blue-white decks that you like.
I would still like that blue-white deck.
I would actually be happy if that blue-white deck was the best deck, too. I think that that deck looks super fun to play, for what it's worth.
If Reflector Mage didn't exist, I would agree. But if Reflector Mage is good, I think the format sucks.
It is a very frustrating card, and that's very true.
So before we go, what would you guys play next week and why, Quentin?
Huh, I'd probably start with Shota's deck. I'm definitely down for some Grixis control, and I'm wanting to cast some Torrential Gearhulks here.
Matt?
I would play Black-Green Delirium. I have a list that I think is great, and... I will probably continue to play that until they tell me I can't.
Okay. By they, you mean like the community at large is like beating you or like they actually tell you you can't?
No. Like Wizards of the Coast, you know, like has a rotation and then all the cards that say Delirium on them go out.
Okay.
Standard.
All right. All right. I'm torn. I really, really like this Grixis deck. So that's probably where I would start. I really like Thing in the Ice too. So, but that I'm with Quentin. That's exactly where I would be. I do think that Teemer Emerge was underrepresented at this Pro Tour, and I think that it was performed well enough at this Pro Tour that I would be interested to see if that space is explored again, because I think that people kind of... Here's the thing, and here's why a lot of people didn't play it, by the way, is because more people ended up on Teemer Aetherworks than I thought would, and that's a very bad matchup.
Yep.
But... that can be good post-board, and I think that that deck is still playable.
And then you're pretty good against all the stuff
and then
that's
you're good
against
the other decks. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I do think that... I mean, there were some in the top-performing decks, but I would expect Teemer Emerge to still be a deck. And that's the other deck that I would consider. I think that's kind of where you are too, where you're learning it. And I love it when Quinn and I are the same place at a format.
It's great.
It means the format's fun.
Yes.
So thank you everybody for listening. Don't forget to check out our Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg to become a patron of the show. Thank you so much to Matt and Quentin for coming on this week. I appreciate having you two, available to me when I need you guys. And I hope it's fun for you guys.
Well, of course, it was a blast.
Yeah, it's always nice to be here.
So, two guys that I like legitimately love. So, where can people find you if they want to talk to you about Magic, Quentin? And you guys both play Modo more than is humanly possible. So
that's probably true. You find me on Magic Online. My username is Earthstripe. That's URTHSTRYPE.
You have to spell it wrong first. It's a joke.
What's the wrong way to spell it? I don't even know anymore.
Just ask me to spell it any time. I can
tell. Okay, sure. I'll just forward that question to you next time. You can find me on Facebook, just Quentin Pierce, like it's spelled. I assume you can put that in a link. I don't want to go through my entire name.
That's fine.
All right, cool. And then on Twitter, at Quentin Pierce.
Yeah, so Quentin, pretty much everywhere other than Earthstripe, URTHSTYRPE. Did I get it?
Yeah, I think that time you got it.
Woo! All right. Matt, where can people find you?
People can find me on Modo. My Modo name is Witchkling. And then on Twitter, you can find me at The Witch Kling. Facebook, you can find me. It's just Matthew Kling. Nice and simple.
And they can find you guys in the Facebook group, too. If they want to, reach out to you and, you guys take too long to accept their friend request, they can just tag you in a post and you guys will see it.
Yeah, I mean, likely I won't take very long to accept your friend request on Facebook or whatever. Twitter, for whatever reason, doesn't give me notifications sometimes when I get tweets. But that's rare. So I would expect that if you actually have a question for me about anything, I will be able to answer promptly.
Sure. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. Also, what did you mean? You and him are losers?
Yeah, we don't get too many friend requests, so we're eager to accept them.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. You can find me on Twitter, Spencer13H. You can find me on Modo at Spencer13Dev. You can message me or Quentin on Modo if either of us are on to add you to the clan. We have an MTGO clan that we'd be happy to add you to, which we will one day have benefits for. We've actually been talking to people about what kind of things they want, so join the clan and that's something that might be able to help you out. You can mostly find me in the Facebook group. I'm there. I respond to a lot of things. The community there is so good lately that I haven't had to respond. I know that there is a many people in that group that say that is their favorite part of Magic. Not even the game anymore, as much as it is the Constructive Criticism Facebook group is something that they hold dear to themselves as to, the interactions that they have, the friends that they're making, the playtesting that they're starting. And I couldn't be happier with how this community treats each other. I actually do believe we have the best Magic community out of all the Magic communities. We've created something beautiful. So ask to join the Facebook group. You can message me on Facebook to make sure that I don't think that you're trying to sell sunglasses like Casey. but... Did you guys get those tweets too?
I didn't, luckily.
I also did not, but...
Lucky guys. you can message me or just ask to join, and you can look in the show notes for that. Don't forget to check out our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at OasisGamesSLC.com, OasisCG.com, and MTGOasis.com. They really are the best place to buy Magic cards, and we couldn't do this podcast without them. So I'll see you guys next week. Quentin, say something ridiculous about Mackling.
He's good looking.
That is ridiculous.
That is ridiculous.
Thank you guys so much, and enjoy playing Magic.
Bye, everyone.
See ya. Magic.